I'm Sarah Brown, and this is Gnosis, the podcast where no topic is off limits, but it's always in the outer limits. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. A lot of amazing books often get brought up in the interviews on this show, and although I'd always advocate for you to read them all yourself, I do believe that it can be valuable for you to hear more background about a book before committing to reading it. That is why I'm going to be starting a new series on spiritual books that I have had a profound impact on me. Starting with today's episode. As always, I would love any feedback you have about today's episode and any thoughts on improving the series over time. So please feel free to send those in an email. Along with the introduction of this new series, I'm also announcing that this episode is the last episode of season 2. I'll be taking a break for the summer so that I can regroup and develop more content for you starting this fall. I mentioned earlier that each season so far has felt like it had a theme. This season's theme has clearly been that everything is connected, which is why I've chosen to review a book that I've talked about tons of times already on my show, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself by Dr. Joe Dispenza. Before jumping into the overview of this book, I want to start with my impressions of the author. Now, I'll admit this is the only book I've ever read by Dr. Dispenza, but the titles of his other books, Evolve Your Brain, Becoming Supernatural, You Are the Placebo, all clearly give me the impression that he strongly believes that our minds have the power to create whatever we want. Creative to a point that probably would seem supernatural to a person who has not tapped into that part of their mind. And I would say Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself gives me the exact same impression. He even says on his website that, quote, "He is driven by the conviction that each of us has the potential for greatness and unlimited abilities." I love the unlimited abilities belief that he holds because it taps into my own belief that we were born to one day be gods that create powerful universes. Other than my impression of Dr. Dispenza's beliefs, the impression that you're likely wondering more about is whether or not I believe he is credible. He has dedicated his life to studying the fields of neuroscience, epigenetics, and quantum physics, which all sound impressive and overwhelming, but when you break down each one, you can kind of see how they work together. Neuroscience, for instance, is the study of the structure and function of the body's nervous system and our brains. Epigenetics is the study of gene expression without altering the genetic code, which is essentially how we can hide or reveal certain characteristics of a gene so that a cell will read it differently. And now quantum physics is the study of how atoms and subatomic particles behave. If we summarize what all of these things mean when studied together, as Dr. Dispenza does, then we can assume that he has a deep understanding of the signals that our body and brain send, how to tap into different parts of our genetic code, and how things behave at the tiniest atomic and subatomic levels. And I think it's safe to assume that if he's studying those three fields, that he has found a way that those areas of study interact with each other. Of course, it's not enough to know what he studied, but also where he studied it. Dr. Joe Dispenza studied biochemistry, neuroscience, chiropractics, neurology, brain function and chemistry, cellular biology, memory formation, and aging and longevity, all from accredited universities. Overall, I feel like Joe Dispenza has a pretty impressive background in education and research. And yes, I believe he is credible in his line of work. However, he does use several studies in this book that he takes as evidence towards a lot of his points, but it's hard to prove scientifically the impact of thought on our reality. So to some, the evidence may seem like he's taking huge leaps to get there. So now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's dive into the book. The book is broken into three parts. part one, The Science of You, is about our brains at a quantum level. Part two, Your Brain in Meditation, is about how our brains respond in meditation. Part three, Stepping Toward Your New Destiny, it's a cheesy title, but it's wrapping up everything you learn about your brain together into practical application. Honestly, you could skip to part three right away and get all of the steps on how to manifest through meditation, but I found parts one and two to be incredibly compelling. I really think there is value in understanding how your brain works so that you can get the full picture. So I want to go over some of my favorite stories in parts one and two. Part one, The Science of You, he starts by talking about quantum physics. They always say to start small, so I think it's fitting that he starts with atoms, and he actually makes a really amazing observation of atoms. I'm going to try to explain this in my own terms, so I apologize if it's confusing. He talked about the way we learn about atoms in school is there's a nucleus made up of positive and neutrally charged molecules, and then there are electrons floating around that nucleus. However, instead of thinking as an atom in the traditional way that we learn as kids, he shares the quantum model of the atom is actually mostly empty space. So what I mean by this, and what I want you to try and imagine, is the atom still has a nucleus, but instead of having electrons float around the nucleus, it's more of an electron energy cloud surrounding the nucleus. In fact, Dispenza says that actual electrons don't even exist until they are observed. I want to say this again because I feel like this is the basis of everything this book is trying to explain. Electrons don't exist until someone observes them. In my mind, this is like a Schrödinger's cat example. For anyone who doesn't know what Schrödinger's cat is, it's a thought experiment where if you hypothetically place a cat and something that could kill the cat in a box and seal it in, you wouldn't know if the cat was dead or alive until you opened the box and observed it. So until the box is opened, the cat is both dead and alive. This is used to represent how scientific theory works. No one knows if any scientific theory is right or wrong until said theory can be tested and proved. So with that being said, that an electron doesn't exist until we look at it, then he is saying that it is our observation that actually creates an electron. Therefore, we created the electron. And if we can create an electron out of an electron cloud, then we have the potential to create lots of things on a quantum level. And if we can create things on a quantum level with just observation, then we have the power to create physical changes in our lives with our mind. He actually has an amazing example of this working for people, and his example actually perfectly ties into our first episode of season two, where life coach Chantel Paulson came in and talked about manifestation. If you remember back to her episode, Chantel talked about the different ways that you can manifest, and one of those was through prayer. Well, in Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, he writes about a study where a researcher selected nearly 3,400 people who were infected with sepsis. He randomly divided the group into half, into a control group and a test group. Then he had a group of people pray for the test group of people. He noticed that the group that was prayed for healed at a statistically significant rate over the group that was not prayed for. The kind of questionable part of this study was actually that people were praying for people in the past. So Dr. Dispenza considers this evidence that we can use our mental abilities to affect things in different timelines. But I've also heard the counter argument that the researcher could have rigged it so the results turned out that way because he had access to medical records that had already happened. I personally choose to believe that a researcher who conducted a study properly wouldn't do that, and that this could be seen as evidence toward manifesting through prayer. But I would like to present both sides of the argument so that you can make up your own mind about it. Another major thing he talks about in part one is that in order to make your thoughts reality, you have to marry them with emotions. So, unlike some people might teach, you can't just change your reality with a clear thought or intention, and you can't just change your reality with positive emotions. You need both of them. So, step one would be to get really clear on what you want, and step two would be to actually feel the emotion that you would feel as if you'd already gotten what you wanted. I really love the idea of this because I've done one or the other for most of my life, and it never occurred to me that I would need to do both in order to create a successful outcome. So I apply this by setting a really clear SMART goal and then focusing on the positive feeling I would have if I already achieved that goal. I'm definitely not perfect at this, but I feel like it's the first step to really manifesting. So I like to practice this a lot. Overall, part one gives a few tips about how this manifesting should be done, aka get your intention really clear, then marry your thoughts and emotions. But part one is really mostly building evidence towards the fact that we can use our mind to affect our reality. This isn't a new concept, but he uses a lot of quantum physics to reinforce that idea. Okay, we're moving kind of fast. But let's move on to part two. Your brain and meditation starts with an analogy about our brains as computers. If you give two equally powerful computers to two different people, one person who's excellent with computers and one person who just has a basic understanding of computers, the person with the most knowledge of computers will be able to take that powerful computer and actually use it to its fullest extent. Dr. Dispenza is basically saying that if we understand our brains better, then we can use them better, especially in the case of creating things with our mind. This example of computers really takes me back to our virtualization episode with David Sessai. I love the way that Dr. Dispenza really acknowledges that there is some kind of universal force or God out there and can also see the world in a virtual way. I just really feel like it's all connected. It blows my mind. Anyway, the goal of this section is to teach us about the brain so that we can be the computer geniuses of our own minds. He breaks the brain into three parts: the neocortex, which is our thinking brain, the limbic or emotional brain, and the cerebellum or subconscious mind. He says that the goal should be for our thinking brain to memorize an action, our feeling brain to memorize an emotion associated with that action, then it'll write a code into our subconscious brain so that we won't have to actively rehearse those thoughts and actions anymore. It'll just be who we are. Now, I absolutely love this section, so I want to explain that differently to make sure that I'm getting this idea across. This book is called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, which would suggest that the premise of the book is about breaking bad habits that we've developed over the years. Dr. Dispenza says that the reason we don't reach our full potential is because we've memorized actions and feelings that keep us from doing that. For instance, if I'm a pessimistic person over and over again, my brain learns to look at the world pessimistically. Therefore, I have memorized what it physically looks like to be a pessimist, and I've memorized what it feels like to be a pessimist. And at some point, it's not only easy to be a pessimist, but my body will learn to be dependent on pessimism. It will need to feel pessimistic in order to feel equalized, to feel it's balanced. So, to emphasize how insane this is, I just want to reiterate that our bad habits and emotions essentially become our addictions. If we're always angry, our body learns to need anger. I'll be open and share that I have bitten my fingers since I was probably 5 years old, and I've never been able to kick this habit. And I know that it's a bad habit, but I've done it for so many years that my body will feel like so unsettled if I go more than a week without biting my fingers. Honestly, it's a bad habit that I should try to break with this process. Anyway, in order to make good habits though, it's the exact same process. We need to think the things we want over and over again and feel the positive emotions associated with them over and over again so that our bodies can memorize those thoughts and feelings. Then they belong to our subconscious and we will naturally refer to those good habits without having to think about it. I feel like this concept is far easier to believe in than the ones where we affect the world around us on a quantum level, like he explains in part one. But we need to understand both of these things to really get the power that our brains hold. So up to this point, he's given us the science behind building strong habits and introduced the idea that we have the power to change our physical reality. At this point, I think it's really important to talk about how stubbornness plays into this. Dr. Dispenza talks about how by the time we're in our 30s or 40s, we've experienced so many things in life that we can basically predict different outcomes. This makes us take less risks. It means that we don't try many new things because we know what we like. And it means that some of our bad habits are deeply ingrained. This is why I feel like awareness about a problem is usually the first step in any recovery program. If we aren't aware of a problem, or if people around us let us get too comfortable in our bad habits, then we may never have a catalyst for change. This is actually one of the reasons that I always solicit feedback from you guys, because I just never want to be complacent. A lot of ideas and changes I've made to this podcast and to myself over the years have come from people being honest about my imperfections. I always appreciate it when they are delivered gracefully and when people share them with kindness, but no matter how hard the feedback is to hear, it makes me a better person. Even if I don't take the feedback, it often makes me contemplate what would cause a human being to give me that feedback. And I feel like it's had a profound enough of an impact on me that it deserves stating here. But a big part of this whole process of changing who we are so that we can be who we want to be involves letting things go. Dr. Dispenza calls it unmemorizing. He claims that when we break the bonds of our actions, then we are left with raw energy that we can convert into anything we want. This always goes back to us being creators, that we can create things from our minds to our physical world. We can move away from our memorized past and start creating a new future. Honestly, if we are so set in our ways, though, we'll never be able to break those bonds. And it is so vital if we want to move forward. Now, Dr. Dispenza claims that the best way to break those habits that live in our subconscious is to access the subconscious through meditation. And that's really how all of this comes full circle. So part three, stepping towards your new destiny, it really puts everything you learn together, and I'll never be able to do it justice, so I recommend that you buy the book if you're curious. And honestly, even referring to the manifesting episode in the beginning of the season will give you some incredibly actionable steps. But here's a brief overview of how to manifest to change who you are and the physical world around you. Dr. Dispenza recommends a 4-week program so that you can acclimate to this meditation. He has examples of what you should say in a meditation at the back of his book, and he also recommends that you record in your own voice. So I recorded all of his meditations in my own voice, and as I've done the meditations, I've realized that having it recorded in my voice helps me feel like I'm not actually listening to a guided meditation, but like I'm guiding myself through my own mind. It's actually a really cool element of this meditation. But throughout the 4 weeks, you should first practice each of these in 1-week increments. So the first step is to practice an induction, which is essentially the initial step of a meditation where you get into the right mindset for meditating. For instance, you can focus on grounding different parts of your body at a time. And that usually takes about 10 minutes. So you would do 10 minutes of that one, like for an entire week every single day. And then you would move on to adding in the next step. So the next step is recognizing your unconscious bad habits, admitting your flaw, acknowledging the emotion tied to it, and then surrendering that flaw to a higher power. It feels like a lot, but I really love that he recognizes some kind of higher power here. He never states what that higher power is, but through that higher power is how you will tap into the quantum field where you can affect change. Now, after you've mastered steps 1 and 2, you'll move on to observing your thoughts around the thing you're trying to change and practicing what it looks like to change. So that'll happen in week 3. And then finally, week 4 adds in the creation element, where you truly feel gratitude for something that has not yet been given to you. This step is at the end of the meditation. This entire meditation usually takes a little bit more than an hour. And it's the hardest step of them all. Honestly, getting my emotions to be heightened for something I don't have is really, really hard. And as soon as I master it, I'll let you know. Now, I've totally simplified this, and he has some amazing tips in the book that I actually wrote out into personal worksheets for myself so that I can organize my thoughts better. I recorded the meditation in my own voice, and I've used it a handful of times. And admittedly, I know I need to be more consistent with this practice, because each time I've come out of this meditation, I've really felt a change within myself. But there are a few manifesting tips that he leaves in the book that I'll share with you. The first is just minimize distractions. Find a place where you can be left alone for an hour, sit in a comfortable but upright position. I'll admit this one is super important for me. I've definitely fallen asleep several times if I don't find the right position that is both comfortable and keeps me conscious. And finally, to just be in the moment. Don't get caught up in everything being perfect. Perfection is not the goal here. The goal in my mind is just to get incremental change in the right direction. So finally, I just want to talk about some lessons that I've learned from this book. And really, that is the book in the tiniest nutshell ever. There is so much more to it, but overall, what I've learned from this book is that we have the power to change. Our minds are incredibly powerful. And meditation is a conduit to getting what we really want in life. When I was reading this book, so much of it made sense to me. I read some skeptical reviews of the book so that I could give you both sides of the story, and a lot of people will call this pseudoscience. However, all science has met skepticism when it's first introduced. Although I could see some people interpreting this book as a way to think your way into a new life, and a lot of people might find that a little delusional. But I believe our minds are incredibly powerful, that they were given to us by a powerful creator, and so in turn, we have some of that power to create. I do believe that we can tap into the quantum field where we can physically influence the world in our favor. However, I don't think that's enough. I had a mentor once tell me that luck is a prepared mind. I've always interpreted that to mean that when you are prepared for something, the universe will work in your favor. And I've had things work out for me over and over again when I've prepared for them. I've had a very strong belief that that is true. If you want to make a change in your life, you should absolutely make the appropriate actions to prepare for it. I also recently saw a Mr. Rogers episode where he sings a song that says, "You can make believe it happens or pretend that something's true. You can wish or hope or contemplate a thing you'd like to do, but until you start to do it, you will never see it through, because the make-believe pretending just won't do it for you." In my religion, they say that faith without works is dead. You cannot simply wish for something. The most powerful part of this book to me is the idea that we can rewrite our brains into new habits. Habits are actions. If we can take a simple bad habit like biting our nails and turn that into making an improvement into our lives, we would have vastly different lives. In my mind, the true power of this book is learning to recognize the things that are holding us back and let go of them. Surrender them to a higher power and adopt something that moves us closer to our dreams. If you are looking to do that, then I completely recommend this book.
Thank
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gnosis. And thank you to Joseph McDade for letting us use his song, Olympus. If you're a fan of the show, help us spread the word by leaving a review with lots of stars. For any feedback, stories, or ideas, please email me at thenosispodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at thenosispodcast. Additional information on our guests can always be found in the show notes. Until next time, keep exploring those spiritual mysteries.